Okay, so today's Dhamma is called the Lokapala. Lokapala. Loka means world. Pala means protector or guardian. And there's two of these as well. So world, there are three kinds of world. World, there's the Akasa Loka, the world of space. Satta Loka, the world of beings, and Sankhara Loka, the world of experiences, arisen phenomena. So Akasa Loka you can't protect. Akasa Loka, the universe, the space that we call the universe, it arises and is destroyed on a cycle, and there's no power that could possibly change that. That's something we can't affect. This whole earth, this whole solar system, this whole galaxy, the whole universe will be destroyed, is destroyed in one of a number of different ways. And of course, that's well beyond our frame of reference. Sankhara Loka is the world of experiences, and again, that's not something you can protect, obviously, though there's protection involved in meditation practice, but it's nothing to do with what we're talking about today. This is about protecting the world of beings, so society, really. The world of human beings is the main focus. Protection, well, there's forces that we protect society from, natural forces. There's political and economic forces that we talk about protections. Countries will protect their people. There's war, defense, and that sort of thing. What we're talking about here, obviously, is something deeper, something about protecting society from itself, really. And so the two lokapala are hiri and otapa. These are the two qualities of mind that protect society from itself. Or you could say are guardians of society, that keep any society or keep the world stable, functioning, and conducive to the cultivation of good things. Hiri is shame. It's more or less literal translation is something like shame. And otapa is something like fear, dread or some kind of shaking, like when a person is so scared that they start to shake. This is the idea. Remember, these words are just terms. You need a word when you're trying to describe something, and sometimes the term you use is used in other ways or is inexact, but you give it a term anyway, and then you start to redefine the term. It's, I think, called an operative definition. So you give it a name, and you say, no, this word means something new in this context. And obviously these words don't exactly correspond to the English words, but also the Pali as well. For many Pali terms, you have to understand that even the Buddha, when the Buddha first used these terms, they didn't mean what they eventually meant according to his teaching. So basically the idea is shame and fear in relation to the performance of evil deeds. So if you were to ask an ordinary Buddhist who hadn't studied much, what were the sorts of things that would protect a person, or what are the things that would cause the disruption of society? If they think from a Buddhist perspective, it would be greed, anger, delusion. And on a basic, very simple level, these are the root causes of trouble in society. Even when we look at environmental degradation, why do we degrade the environment? Why do we pollute? pollution is a part of reality. Animals pollute. But why do humans pollute to the excess that begins to destroy the environment? It's because of the intense amount of greed and the defilements that pollute the mind that cause us to want to consume more and more. But there's something significant about the idea of Hiri and Otapa that, well, first of all, on a very basic level, cause us to be greedy and angry and deluded, and more importantly, cause us to follow these emotions. But more importantly, on a practical level, a society doesn't have to be free from greed, free from anger, free from delusion to function. Even a Buddhist society, as Buddhists, obviously, we don't require you to be free from greed, anger, and delusion to be Buddhist. We don't even consider you a bad Buddhist if you still have greed, anger, and delusion. So there is something more there. Obviously, Buddhists are striving or holding as the ultimate goal that of having no greed, no anger, and no delusion, but we don't chastise each other or shame each other for having these qualities. We acknowledge them. And when someone gets angry, we don't say, oh, what a bad Buddhist you are. We acknowledge and we say, I appreciate that you still have work to do, and I will give you your space to do that work, maybe encourage you to be a little more dedicated to mindfulness or meditation. But you see where I'm going, that Hiri and Otapa are something like the boundary, where when you lack shame or when you lack fear, and again, these words are not exact, and I'll explain in a second, that's where you cross a line, right? A person who has greed may not disrupt society, may not disrupt their family, they may cause some stress and tension, but usually in a family or a society, greed is considered a good thing, even anger. Oh, there's that person, look at how angry they are. Boy, I wish I had your conviction about this topic or that topic. When they see the person angry, yes, get angry. Even at sports, people get angry at the opposite team, and they get angry at the referees, but no one sees that as a disruption of society. Now, as meditators, we know this causes stress and suffering on a fundamental level, but it's not something that even as Buddhists we worry about. What we're really concerned with, and what's very valuable, not just as meditators, but as teachers, as people spreading the Buddha's teaching, is to help people to learn what we call Hiri and Otapa, because these are the things that cause, with the absence of which, cause true disruption of society. So Hiri, how you differentiate these two, Hiri relates to the nature of a deed. Shame, it relates to the action itself. When you think about hurting someone, when you think about saying something or doing something that is unwholesome or harmful to others, that idea of doing it, the repulsion from doing that deed, that's called Hiri. So we call that shame. We use the term shame to describe that. Now, being ashamed is not always the same as this. What we call shame in English or even in Pali, the idea of being ashamed of something can just be a self-hatred. It can be the anger feeling or the disliking. Suppose you did something wrong and then you feel ashamed of having done it. That's not really a protection. It doesn't really stop you from doing it again. It can and is usually related to the knowledge that what you've done is wrong and can be related to the states that prevent you from doing it again. But quite often the shame and the guilt, right, associated with doing evil deeds doesn't stop you at all. It's a part of the suffering that comes from doing wrong deeds. Otapa relates to the result of the deed. Otapa is the thought of what might come from doing that. If you think, suppose you steal from someone, and it just horrifies you to think of them having lost their property. Or more simply, more obviously, maybe they'll find out about it, or maybe the police will find out, maybe I'll get in trouble, and thinking about the consequences to yourself. Anything like that is called otapa, where you think about the consequences of the deed. The Lakkhanadi Chatukka of these four, these two, remember this is the four qualities, four aspects of a thing. So for Otapa, for Hiri, the characteristic is the disgust towards the deed. When you think of the deed, it's disgust. Otapa is the dread. The characteristic is dread. That's the characteristic of the two. The function of the two is what is its function? What are they for? Is to not do bad deeds, with the body or bad deeds of speech. The manifestation, they manifest as the shying away from doing the deeds. So the disinclination towards doing those deeds. When the opportunity comes to do something bad with body or speech, there's the disinclination, that the arising of that, that's how they manifest. The proximate cause is, for Hiri, respect for oneself. Your respect for yourself, the confidence and the wholesomeness of mind that appreciates yourself leads to Hiri. You wouldn't want to do that, like a person who feels clean. They've just put on a nice clean shirt or a nice clean robe and they feel clean. They would be especially opposed to jumping in a mud puddle or going where it's dirty or so on. And otapa is the arising of otapa, proximate cause is respect for others. Respecting, obviously, their right to not be harmed. Respecting the harm that would come to them and respecting their right to be happy or the goodness of them being happy. And also respecting the consequences that they could bring back to you. If you harm others, they will be a part of the repercussions through retaliation and so on. So if you understand them in this way, it's not so much about the shame and the fear. And again, these are not disliking or the aversion or the self-hatred that arises so often among people who strive to do good or who have knowledge and familiarity with what is right, and arises among religious people especially. You hear about it in other religions, Christians who do very terrible things but feel horrible about themselves inside but can't help themselves. Right? Buddhists, of course, can quite often be the same. Those states are not Hiri and Otapa. Those states are not beneficial. They're a defense mechanism. They're a way of coping rather than solving a problem. And they're an important part of our meditation practice when there arises these states of aversion, of even fear. Because otapa is not the fear. It doesn't mean you feel afraid. If you ever have fear, like you did a bad deed and you're afraid that you're going to reap the consequences, that's not wholesome. Fear is never wholesome, obviously. So when you have fear, it's important you're not afraid. These are rather the disinclination. How do you give rise to this disinclination? Again, there's this respect, but how do we cultivate this and what part of our practice leads to this? So a person obviously first comes towards the disinclination to performing unwholesome deeds through learning about what is right and what is wrong. Obviously, this is not nearly enough, but it is quite helpful. It's, of course, most helpful to have someone like the Buddha who could teach exactly what is right and what is wrong and who was so clear and precise and certain about what is right and wrong. So much of what we read about ethics and right and wrong is confusing, confused, misguided, right? So we have teachings on utilitarian ethics, where it's only right because of the situation, or it's only right conditionally right, like killing is sometimes good, and how do you know when is it right to kill, and there's so much about just war and when is war just and so on. When are evil deeds justified? When are deeds that are harmful to others justified? There's other systems that talk about God. What does God say is right? What does God say is wrong? And there's this famous dilemma, the Euthyphro's dilemma, I think, of Plato, where he proposes that, he poses the question, well, if it's right because God says it right, says it's right, if it's wrong because God says it's wrong, is it wrong because God says it's wrong, or does God say it's wrong because it's wrong? And the point being, there's no need for God. If it's just because God says it's wrong, then there's no basis for it whatsoever. But on the other hand, if God says it's wrong because it's wrong, then again, it has nothing to do with God, meaning very confused and confusing systems of justice that we find in the world. With Buddhism, of course, it's different, and there's a clarity and a certainty because it relates directly towards states of mind that are incontrovertible, that you can know exist or do not exist. So if anger and greed and delusion are not present, then it can never be wrong in any way, shape, or form. And vice versa, as long as greed, anger, and delusion are there, it will always be wrong. So there's a clarity that comes, and comes when you hear about the five precepts, when you learn about Buddhist ethics and what it's based on and so on. But ultimately it goes deeper than that, and one of the great ways that we learn ethics is through experience. Of course, as people get older, they develop a sense of ethics, but unfortunately they often develop bad habits, bad ethical habits. If you know old people who get stuck in unethical ways, people who become racist or xenophobic or bigoted in various ways, people who become stuck in unwholesome ways, it's also possible. So in Buddhism, well, we have two ways of developing the mind that also, of course, lead to the development of Hiri and Ottapa. The first is samatha practice. When you practice samatha and your mind becomes tranquil, this helps you develop Hiri and Ottapa for the simple reason that unwholesome deeds disrupt your quality of mind. Whether it be the deeds themselves with the arising of greed, anger, and delusion, this disrupts your peace of mind now and in the future. And also the results of the deeds, the worry and the fear about consequences and the disturbance and the bother that comes from when the consequences arise through retaliation, being surrounded by people who you've been mean to and harmful towards, is of course unconducive towards the tranquility of mind. So even the practice of samatha meditation is conducive very much to the cultivation of Hiri and Ottapa. This is why even, of course, it doesn't require Buddhism to have these qualities. But other religious people who are deeply religious will often have these qualities simply because they see how it aids in the cultivation of tranquility and peace. It's much more peaceful, of course, to have peace on earth and to not disrupt society. The other way that we develop it is, of course, through mindfulness, through vipassana. When a person practices vipassana, they see how harmful deeds are gross and disgusting and stressful and harmful. And more importantly, incorrect, improper, illogical, inconsistent. You want to be happy, but you act in such a way that creates stress and suffering. With mindfulness, it makes no sense. It's illogical. It's like an impossibility. You can't be unethical and also be mindful at the same time, because the clarity doesn't allow it. And you see also the results of the deeds. As you're mindful, you see moment by moment the consequences of karma, of the qualities of mind that arise. So this is how we develop Hiri and Ottapa. again, a valuable teaching, something that was included in basic Dhamma study, not just again for people who are deeply devoted to the practice, but as an important thing to remind others about. This is something that is most valuable. If you can think about your society where you grew up, if you think about the politics in the world today, I think everyone can see how these two qualities play an important part in the maintenance of the wholesomeness of society. I would say much more than things like economics or political leaning or so on. None of those things have any real meaning or real importance until it comes to things like shame, a sense of the wrongness of what is wrong and the rightness of what is right, and the consequences of good deeds and the consequences of bad deeds. So, an important Dhamma, something for us, of course, to learn as a basic part of our study. So that's the Dhamma for today.